We're just pausing for a second. You can cut this out.
Okay. Or maybe not. There's a plane going by.
It's a helicopter. It's about 4 feet over the house. They do this all the time.
Pure gold.
It's all pure gold when it's coming out of, oops, your culture's showing.
That's right. So remember that.
If only. So what?
We took what?
You're interrupting me. Did you mean to interrupt me?
Yes. No.
I think you did.
I don't mean to interrupt.
That's an earlier podcast. If you don't know what we're referring to,
podcasts, so
you need to go back and check it up.
If you don't know,
we're not doing your homework for you.
Seriously.
Okay. So, yes, I'm sorry. Dean Foster.
And Tom Peterson.
Yes. Oops. Your culture's showing.
Actually,
what?
Oh, he's here too.
He's humming to the song now. It's kind of pathetic.
It's catchy.
A little pathetic.
I like it.
It is catchy.
Yeah.
And he is
Torin.
Yes.
Well, Torin, our producer.
Yes. Hello.
And he may add something of worth to the show.
I might.
And he may not. But we might. Then again, we're all in that boat. I think
we might mention that we are in the process today of doing a series of podcasts, and by
Inside
virtue
baseball.
of having to do that, we do need to take breaks from time to time.
Do we?
And we were talking in the last podcast.
This is going a bad way, I know. Somehow this is not going to end
getting
up
nervous?
Well.
Yeah,
I'm very nervous.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous too.
A little anxious?
Yeah.
You want a Xanax?
Oh wow! By the way, that was a plug, I believe. Any pharmaceutical company would like to get in touch with us.
They already did. So
that's what happened. Okay.
So we took a break
in
between this and the previous podcast, where we talked about differences in how we view elders across cultures.
Yeah.
And I took a break.
That
that implies going into the bathroom. Okay, right.
Mm. I'm getting nervous as we go on here.
And I noticed in preparation for our discussions now, as I left the bathroom, there's a plaque on the wall that is a reproduction of a child taking a bath from the turn of the century.
Okay.
And the child is depicted as having an adult's face.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
And it's an old replica. It's a charming little
an actual painting.
A painting on metal on a plaque.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Huh.
And actually I picked this up at one of the bouquinistes in Paris.
Uh-huh.
You know, you walk along the Seine, there's these wonderful bookstalls and they sell little little tchotchkes of this and that.
Nice.
One of the booksellers was selling these reproduction plaques of old advertisements from the turn of the century.
Okay.
This is an advertisement for soap.
Makes sense.
And there's a little child.
Kind of reproduction. Gotcha. Okay.
And there's a little.
Wow.
Clarifying.
Wow.
Well, there's a child. And the
there's
child
a child.
Is a result
so
of reproduction.
Multiple kinds.
Remember how good it was when we didn't have a producer?
When was that?
No, we didn't have it in studio.
Ah, I see.
And I was remarking to myself as I'm leaving.
Self, yes.
This child's face looked just, in other words, at the turn of a century in France and in much of Europe, and I'm going to include Britain here too because they had their own Victorian version, you had the depiction of the child as a miniature adult. And and oftentimes advertising reflects the cultural norms of the moment.
Yeah.
And so it looked absolutely, I'm sure, to people of that time, the way children are supposed to look. And children don't look anything like this weird, spooky plaque.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy.
Because what's creepy is that you got an adult face on the body of a child.
Yeah, that's not good.
And so we see it now as kind of creepy and weird and kind of interesting, you know, a statement of a cultural norm.
What we assume is a bygone era, hopefully.
Yes, right.
Hopefully.
And so not only do we view children differently because of culture?
Yeah.
But we also, the views that we have change over time.
Sure.
And the way that different cultures view children, rear children, what a child is expected to do and be, the old phrase, children are expected to be seen but not heard.
Right.
Uh-huh, right.
That's a very, comes out of this period, this Victorian period.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's just really, we need to talk about this. We need to talk about
how children are
looked at differently in different cultures, not only across times, you know, 150 years ago, but really across cultures right now.
Right.
All right.
Right now.
Well, son of a gun, if that's, this isn't an episode that is going to talk about children.
Well, yeah. Well, there's, you know, there's a new series on Netflix, which
I think I know what you're going to mention.
I forget the name of it. It's a Japanese
Old Enough?
Series.
Is that what you're, thinking of? Yes.
Right. The Japanese
series. That started, I think, in 2008, but just came out on Netflix. So American audiences are seeing it for the first
time.
It's
brand new for American audiences.
And probably many other
audiences. Most Americans. Yeah. And when I watched one, I was completely enchanted. You're watching toddlers.
Yes.
So
it's great.
They're very funny.
And what's the premise?
Automatically, you're watching. Well, these toddlers are given a certain responsibility.
And by toddlers, we're talking like 2 to 4 in that age range, maybe up to 6 or so.
And they have an errand.
An errand to run.
Yeah.
And so they have to run the errand, and they learn about how to do a basic functional task.
Right.
And it's absolutely charming because children are evolutionarily, you know, designed to be cute and charming.
Right. So you'll keep them.
Or else we would defenester them instantly.
Exactly.
Of course. Yeah.
So, that's right out the window.
That's a cross-cultural thing, I think, actually.
But I'm watching this episode while being charmed and absolutely being horrified at the same time.
Yeah.
Because I'm saying to myself, I wonder what the response to this series is going to be in the U.S. because I think most Americans are going to be shocked and they're going to interpret this as negligence, as parental negligence.
Absolutely.
Right.
No,
letting these children cross the street.
Yeah.
Or instead of giving them the freedom that they Americans supposedly believe everyone should have.
Right, right.
You know, certainly the freedom to mature and learn and grow as a child.
Yeah.
They're going to, the helicopter parent who's constantly hovering is going to interpret this as child abuse.
Negligence.
Certainly negligence. And I'm thinking, in many other cultures, certainly in Japan, that wasn't even part of the conversation. Hmm. Children are given a lot of responsibilities far beyond what we give our children here today without the parental hovering. And I think if you go back 2 or 3 generations in this country, and when I say this country, I'm talking about the U.S., you also have the sense was much more like the prevailing sense of raising a child. That's depicted in this series than it is today.
Mm. Yes.
Children were given far greater responsibility. Mm. Now, was there neglect and negligence? Yes, of course there was. And I'm sure an argument could be made for the fact that we have gone in a positive direction by being more hovering or more careful or more concerned about how the children perform these tasks or whether they even should. Mm-hmm. But in general, there's no debate over the fact that we have become much more concerned and much more litigious even over issues of discipline and freedom for a child to learn and grow through their own experiences.
Right.
And this is depicted in the school systems, in theories of education, in how we develop our children.
Parenting books.
And how we parent them as well. Mm-hmm. And all of this, like everything in human society, is a reflection of the culture.
Right.
And so you're going to see differences. You're going to see the French raising their children in a very different way from even the British and the British raising their kids different from the Japanese and from the U.S. Americans. Mm-hmm. And all of this is a reflection of the differences in fundamental cultures.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And spreading into across Central and South America, into Africa, all across the world, into Australia and into the islands in the Pacific and so on. You get cold weather and warm weather and so on, all helping to dictate how the cultures are going to look at that, but also just the cultures themselves. So what can we look at here? We've got the Japanese looking at it a little more freedom, I would say, generally speaking. I don't think we can say, again, large countries, we've talked about this in the past with these things. Large countries are going to differ somewhat in different areas.
Right.
Much more rural areas are going to be different with children than much more urban
right.
ones. Right. And can you say more urban? I guess you can.
Yeah. Urbaner?
I just did. Urbaner, I think, is that's correct.
Are we sliding into grammar time?
Oh, no. Everybody yeah, loves grammar urban. Time. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Everybody just, loves it. Come on, people.
Everyone loves it. Most popular segment on earth.
You know,
universally beloved.
It's true. And what's happening to the death of the semicolon? I mean,
oh, I know. No, I think about this please. Every single day. It's tragic.
What's happening? It's I don't done. See I semicolons anymore.
You don't. And I think there should be an operation for that.
There was an old comedy bit. You remember the old comedian?
Thank you, by the way.
Victor Borgia.
Victor Borgia, yes.
An old Danish comedian. No. He had a bit.
Brilliant comedian.
Where he would give a sound to the pronunciation
the
marks.
Yeah.
And you can't watch this without falling off your chair.
It's very funny. Yes.
It's very funny.
Can you give an example?
Like the period or the full stop, as the British would say. Mm-hmm. It was...
Okay.
Yeah.
The question mark was... Yep. So you can see where this is going to go,
sure.
Right?
Uh-huh.
I forget what the semicolon was.
There was a dash, like, shh, something like that, you know, and so
a
on.
Comma,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, and he was so extraordinarily good at it. He could do it at really speaking quickly.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, what does this say about Danish culture, though?
That they are very sick human beings. Oh, no? Am I wrong?
Our Danes,
I took a stab.
We're so sorry.
I just took a stab.
Do not listen to him.
Well, I can say that because I have Danish heritage.
Oh, so it's fine.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Great.
I really don't have
I was going to say, I didn't think you did.
Not don't.
Or that I do.
Maybe a little bit, but
maybe, who knows?
You know.
So what does this have to do with raising children?
I don't know.
I'd like to know about the culture that you were raised in.
We killed about 10 minutes.
We just needed a little grammar time. You know. We got it in.
But to your question.
You have grammar time quota.
Which question? I don't even know what the question was anymore.
Japan.
Oh. Japan, yes.
Oh, was that...
That's right.
That actually, he didn't remember what the question was.
So is that the case where children are given a little more autonomy in Japan, or is it just that this game show...
And is that true in urban settings as well?
That was your urbaner question.
Oh, right.
Yeah, more my urban, more urban. More yes.
Yep. Yeah. I think it is in urban... I think most of the series does take place in an urban
setting.
It
seemed, from what I've seen.
And I do think that is the case in Japan. And I think this is very ironic because in the U.S., anything that where you can use the word freedom, individual freedom, supposedly is valued, except if it challenges somebody's political agenda.
Of course.
Or some kind of agenda.
Well, that's kind of true throughout the United States.
Often does.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And children are powerless, absolutely powerless, you know, so they're a group that's easy to marginalize.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And therefore, no, they require the parental guidance to an extreme degree.
To an extreme degree, absolutely.
And I think part of that is the concern that the parents have, ostensibly over safety, and much of it is valid. Because if your kid can go to school and get shot, you should be concerned about safety.
You should. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But it's misplaced, as we know.
Sure.
Yep. And it's
most of the time.
It's become a substitution for basically, I believe, taking a marginalized group that is powerless and controlling it because there's a sense by many other groups of not having any control at all.
Right.
Sure.
In their lives.
Yeah, and I think also the more I think, I have no expertise in this other than the fact that I raised two children and I'm now helping with grandchildren, but that doesn't necessarily make me knowledgeable at all.
But in a culture like Japan, I don't mean to interrupt. But
yes, you do. Yes, you
no,
do. Again, reference cool. point, early podcast.
Semicolon, but...
Yeah.
in now you have the culture of Japan, to go back to our original question, which is much more consensus and group-oriented than the individualized U.S.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And so in Japan, it is the responsibility of the other to take care of the children.
Uh-huh.
If there's a child, the neighbor, the person on the street, the adult on the street.
More community-based.
Okay. Much more communal.
Yes. So it's maybe not seen as much of a danger to send
It's not as much of a danger.
Community.
And the reality is that it isn't as much of a danger
in
Japan.
Right. Sure.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, in the U.S., if you have a strange adult disciplining a child on the street and the parent sees this going on, there's a pretty high risk of a confrontation between those two adults.
Yeah.
Right. Huh. While in Japan, it's more likely. I haven't seen studies on this, so this is my hypothesis, sure. But it's more likely that there would be an implicit acceptance of what the other adult is doing on behalf of the child.
Yeah.
Not against the child or against the child's parents.
Or to the child in some way right. that would be uncomfortable or not considered appropriate.
Right.
Okay.
You know, and how this translates into learning styles and education mm-hmm. systems and rearing children. Mm-hmm. I think of the example of the French and the British, because in Britain, and I think U.S. education models and theories are more reflective of the British than the French, or I should say British and continental European, because it's more than just the French. It's continental European. Mm-hmm. The idea of the child being allowed to flower, mm-hmm. to be more like the English garden.
Yeah.
Right? So we raise children the way we prune our garden. And in Britain, the garden is allowed to flower and to find its essence and mm-hmm. to display that essence. Mm-hmm. In France and through in continental Europe, if you take a look at the gardens, they're much more about controlling mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And shaping and disciplining the right. plant, i.e. the child, mm-hmm. to mold them into the shape that you want them to be.
Right. Mm. Okay,
that there is that. An overarching sense of what should be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in the English garden and the English child, the education systems even, are to allow the child to become who they need to become.
Mm-hmm.
Their potential. Right.
Grow into their potential. Right.
Right.
I remember you mentioned that in the France episode as well, around sort of the sort of manicuring.
Yes. In France, right. And so the child, sure, they're just like little adults, like the plaque hanging on my bathroom wall. The face is the adult that's there, but hasn't been shaped to become that yet.
Interesting.
Mm.
That the standard of the human is the adult.
Gotcha. Because I was going to say, they know what a child looks like, right?
Sure.
Probably.
So why is that happening? But that makes sense. Okay.
And I think the underlying question is, you know, why do we have these two different perspectives?
Right.
And that has to do with the culture, where you have the individualist perspective, where every tree, every child, in Britain and in the U.S. And so this is the positive side of that, as opposed to what I had just implied before when I was talking about compared to the Japanese, where every child can flower and become what they need to become, as opposed to the continental European perspective, which was, here's the standard against which we now have to model and develop our children so that at a certain age, at a certain time, they are as perfect the adult as they can be, according to some Platonic standard or ideal of an adult.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Right. And I think that says so much about how those two different cultures view the world, not only child rearing, but also how they see the world. That there needs to be a standard by which we have a method of achieving that standard, as opposed to each individual can create their own standard. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then let's allow that to happen. And then we're allowing the individual to achieve their purpose.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, too, if you have certain ideals in a culture and you just have the humans and who are operating within all of this and creating it. But you have all of a sudden you throw a child into the mix, and you had children, I had children, have, in fact.
Hello.
And in that, though, I mean, I can clearly recall the sense of responsibility and fear almost that comes into you when you realize that this thing, I mean, humans are nothing when they're born because they cannot take care of themselves at all.
Yeah.
Left on their own, they're goners, every single one of them. Mm-hmm. So there's this immense responsibility. certainly there are people who will adjust to it a little better than others, but I think overall that's a fair thing to say to both fathers and mothers, that they are put in positions of suddenly having this, even though if they wanted it, it still is this responsibility that is 24 hours a day, every single day of the year. And so that not burden, I wouldn't say, but that responsibility on them is going to respond in some form. And to me, it would seem like the most typical thing it's going to respond in overall is going to be that the norm that is expected of them, that what do they feel they need to be able to do to take care of this child and do it in a way that will be acceptable to the world around them, mm-hmm. whether the immediate world and the general world around them, right. that because to do that, otherwise there is no rule book. You don't get a manual with that kid.
What's given priority, and how are priorities similar and different across cultures?
Right.
Well, I think
the cultures are going to dictate that manual, right?
Exactly. I think there are manuals. And the manual is the culture.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
that's sort of where I'm going here. Explicit, yeah.
Precisely.
And okay. Explicit in books oftentimes.
There's no written manual. You can't find a YouTube video.
And when your kid goes to school, that school is a reflection of all of that, of that manual.
Right. Yep.
So you have, you know, in the continental European tradition, you've got kids being separated at a fairly young age, according to academic performance, with very few. Now, it's changing to some degree, but with few options to go back and change that. So if you haven't achieved a certain academic standard by the time you're, it's different in different European countries, but at a relatively young age, we're looking at 11, 12, you know, that's the cutoff point. You're going to be then shuttled into one academic path or one vocational path or another. And there's very little opportunity to go back. And the idea being that you should have achieved these standards by then, as opposed to, I think of the experiences that a lot of children have in the U.S. where there are a lot of options for finding your path at different points along the way. And even if you never really find your path, even if you're just an English major all through, and I'm saying that jokingly, and I'm not saying that, you know, as a derogatory statement about English majors.
Yeah.
But even if you come out on the other end of the college career and still not know what you're going to do.
Right.
Yeah. That's still okay.
You're okay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I mean, I was an English major, and that was part of the idea.
Oh, sorry about that.
Really? No, it's perfectly valid.
Still trying to figure it out. Of course, I'm still trying to figure it out also.
That makes me think, Dean, of the German apprenticeship model, where I know kids promoted more to go on the vocational path. I want to say in high school, that's much more of an option for kids in Germany it's more encouraged, I think.
Yes, and it's a clear marker. You have to take a test. You have to move on.
I think it's high school.
And
I could be wrong with that, but
right.
Yeah.
But that's,
there's a vocational pass here in the U.S., but it's not encouraged to the same degree as it would be in. Right.
It's in fact, in many cases, it can be, and it depends where you are in the country, of course, but it can be thought of as the other way. In other words, if you're not going to college,
right.
This is the thing.
This
you
is
have
another
to,
path,
you have
as opposed to
do.
This is just embedded into the educational system.
Right,
it seems to be more so in Germany. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
I will say this too: I've been for the last 12 years, I've been teaching in colleges here in the United States and in colleges, universities, and the academic approach to all of this is to also add on layers of academic approval, which in some cases I believe is a type of thing that is being done to promote their own business.
There's a certification system.
Yeah, excellent. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Which is always an agenda for the institution that's certified.
Without a doubt, yes. But at the same time, it's saying, well, do you have this? You know, do you have that certification? Do you have this? And blah, blah, blah. And so it gets to another level. So now, to go to the side you're talking about, you get a person who does come out in the United States, who comes out of the high school system, and instead of going to college, is going into a trade of some kind. And by the way, if it's code writing for computers, they're going to make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to do? And then they're deciding to go in another direction. Sure, they can go in another direction, but I think we tend, in certain other ways, we put our own restrictions onto it. Because that's what our culture is, too.
That's what cultures define, the barriers,
right,
and the boundaries, and,
right,
and the bennies and the not bennies.
Sure.
Depending on which path you choose. The point is, there are optional paths.
There are.
As opposed to these others where it's fairly closed, and those decisions are made pretty early.
Yeah.
But, you know, but independent of the educational systems and philosophies of learning that have developed out of cultural differences, there's also just the whole sense of how we view the best way, to your point, Tom, about just raising the child before they even get to school.
Yes.
Right? I can remember in my family, my father was from Eastern Europe. My mother's family was from basically Western Europe, more German. My father was from the Slavic world. His family was East. My mother's family was from the German world, more West. And they had two different ways of viewing, and sometimes these things are most evident in the simplest examples of how to raise me. I experience confusion over this because in my father's Slavic world, the value was you had to, when it got cold in New York City in the wintertime, you had to protect the child, bundle them up, close the windows, and make sure that they didn't catch a cold or catching a cold. I think the whole idea of getting sick from cold air, catching a cold,
you know,
is part of this tradition.
Right.
On my mother's German side, raising the child was precisely when they get sick. Take them out into the fresh air. Open the window. Put them in the buggy and walk them down the street.
Yeah.
And the fresh air is going to be good for you. It's going to make you strong. And if the colder it is, the better it is.
Get them out there. Yeah.
And I remember as a kid, you know, actually like not. I wanted to go out, but no.
Right.
My father says, "Don't go out," and my mother's going, "Take the kid out."
Right. Where do I go?
And even growing up as a kid, as an older kid, like when the ice cream man would come around in the summertime, my father's reaction to that was, you can't have ices because it's too cold. Even in the summer. He was a little extreme, right?
This answers a lot of questions we had. You know?
Yeah. So, and my mother saying, you know, give the kid his ices. Right. It's okay. Yeah. So, these are two cultural differences about child rearing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very basic. And I think we see these differences based on the culture everywhere. You were in a school in Jordan.
Yes, I was in the Peace Corps in Jordan.
Did you see anything that reflected the educational philosophy of child rearing, actually, that might have been different or certainly raised a question for you or struck you in some way?
Yeah. Well, I will say it was, and I was there about 10 years ago, so I don't know if this is still the case or not. It may or may not be, but corporal punishment was fairly pervasive in the schools, and I would ask teachers about it, and they explained to me that the parents requested that their child be either that there was a threat to hit the child or actually hit the child in some way, because that is what was done at home, and they wanted that consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, so corporal punishment, I think, is really interesting in the U.S. because
which used to be more pervasive in the U.S.
Right.
Now, obviously, we're in a place where it's in the U.S. where well, I think it depends on the community, but it's gotten much more. It's going much more towards just not doing that at all.
But I don't think it's because there's a rejection of corporal punishment. I think it's a rejection of who's doing it.
But I don't think it's as acceptable at home longer.
And that's true.
And so it's even the people who used to be able to claim that authority are losing that. And not as much in some areas, as you mentioned. I think that there's some areas that still find it as a viable way of raising your child. Mm-hmm. Except that, and I'm not, I don't think I want to, and I don't think we should be getting into the discussion and the debate over whether it is or it isn't. But it certainly is a cultural aspect. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. it's you're looking at it from a cultural, because we were, Dean, you and I were raised coming from it being a very considered, I don't know if we can say acceptable, but certainly an existing,
it was more normalized
method of rearing a child.
Of discipline.
Yeah, of discipline.
But to your point, though, fortunately, we are moving in out of that world.
I think we are as a result, because I think it goes back to other things we've talked about in that come about as a result, in cultures, as a result of having to grab power. And you've made that point many times, Dean, that things are a result of feeling a loss of power and grabbing it, usually in some sort of extreme form.
Aggrievement is one of the most powerful forces in the world.
Sure.
If you feel aggrieved in some way, left out, marginalized, or powerless.
Yeah. Right.
But it's how do you exert power or control as the parent.
Exactly. And that's where the normatives of culture come in, because that's where there are times when we have to say, no, you cannot do that.
Right.
You cannot do that.
I will say it was very difficult as someone who I have as a personal value of mine. You're talking about the idea of letting the child sort of flourish, right, to reach their full potential. And so very much just as a personal belief and thinking, no, we cannot exert that power, especially physical power or control over it through hitting, right? We have to encourage them, right, to help guide them along. And so then it was, you know, being in a culture where that was not the norm, well, grappling with that.
It's interesting, again, as an example of the different perspectives on this, in many Asian cultures, the idea of raising a child by instilling a sense of shame.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that was a big part.
I think you see a lot of this in the Arab world as well. So, you know, if a child does something wrong, then a traditional, in traditional Japan, for example, what they would do is they would take the child and put the child outside the home. Let's say the incident occurred inside the home. The child did something wrong. They make the child stand outside the doorway. And that was a signal to all the neighbors that the child did something wrong.
Right.
And the child learned that it was wrong because all the neighbors now could see that.
Again, a communal type of
response.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. But now what that does, though, And of course this is traditional, but and I'm using this example just to clearly define the differences. What that does is the child learns that they did something wrong, but they don't learn why it was wrong. They just know it was wrong because everyone else thinks it was wrong.
Right.
And so that's shame.
Right.
Yeah.
They're shamed into not behaving that way.
Yeah.
Right.
Not because they understand why it was wrong.
Right.
Then in the West, discipline often is based on not shame, but guilt.
Guilt, definitely.
Guilt is where you are individualized for the behavior, and you should know why it was wrong, and you should feel guilty about doing something that was wrong because of what you know. Right? So and we can take that to an extreme degree.
Right, sure.
So this different base of, in the communal cultures, shame is a powerful way of motivating human behavior.
Right.
In the individualist cultures, guilt is a powerful way of motivating the behavior.
And in education circles now, there is more of a movement towards what's referred to as restorative justice. So trying to move away from either shaming or guilting the child or excluding the child through suspension, expulsion, whatever it might be, to, okay, you're staying part of the community and you will now practice things to restore that communal feel. And that is what the focus will be. But, you know, talking about shame, we can compare that to, we all know the stories about in the one-room schoolhouse here in the U.S. where the child would be put in the corner of the room and wear the dunce cap, right? Shame.
Shame.
Yeah. And guilt.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's based on that. You feel guilt, you're shamed, the other children are laughing at you, you're excluded from the community for a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of having to make restitution for your mistake as a solution is premised on your understanding of what was wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So maybe that's
so there's an educational piece to that.
So there is a third step in this evolution of discipline.
Yeah.
I know.
Slowly moving towards slowly that. Moving I should clarify that. Too with Jordan too. I was in a village, speaking of more rural or more urban.
Yeah.
I was in a very rural area, so I can't speak to in more urban
smaller
areas,
town what type of scenario. Sure.
It may have looked vastly different for all. And I think maybe likely it did.
Yeah.
And the idea also that different cultures exempt certain groups of children from even needing education. Mm-hmm. Right. So the whole issue of girls not getting fundamental education in so many parts of the world because the culture says they have to be home and they have to be married off.
Or their education just goes in that direction.
The whole system, the whole system is designed so that they don't get educated. And
to perpetuate
the
standard.
The patriarchy.
Right. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Right.
So what I'm thinking is that there is certainly more than one podcast in this whole subject right here. Because it seems like we're at a point where we are still moving right along. I mean, I think there's so much to talk about with children.
There's always so much to talk about.
The kiddos.
Around culture.
Yeah. Well, that's
because
true.
It
at least with us. I don't know if
anybody
else
So we will be doing
cares,
more podcast episodes.
We will be doing more podcasts. Good enough. All right. That's what I wanted to know.
About,
that's all I was trying to come
things.
To. About kids.
And maybe about kids.
And now we'll play a little bit from kids from the Broadway show Bye Bye Birdie.
And we want to know how you were reared.
Reference Tom. Everyone knows.
How you were reared. That's one of
Tell
those
us about your
words.
Reared. Is
yes. Oh, no.
Reared.
We slipped back into grammar time.
Reared,
yes.
Reared,
it's
reared,
grammar
reared,
time.
Reared,
grammar reared, time. Reared, time. Reared, Everybody reared, loves grammar time. Yeah.
Why isn't it? Why is a child reared? Why aren't they? Why aren't they forwarded?
I don't know.
Oh, see.
Well, in today's world, they get forwarded. They get stuck on to some sort of DM and sent out.
Ooh, look at you.
Yeah, there's about that.
The youth terms.
Just like you kids.
You're a youngin' over
kids
there.
Kids and technology. There's another area we can get into and probably will.
But for
not
now,
today, because, oops, your culture's showing. Smell ya.
Okay, listen, the way to get hold of us is oopscultureshow@gmail.com. And our Twitter handle is oopscultureshow. Whether this is the first episode or the third episode or whatever episode that you've listened to, you should really subscribe. That's the best way to go, really, honestly.
I know what I'm talking about.
All right, so just subscribe through iTunes or through wherever you get your podcasts from. Subscribe. Thank you.